Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Bissell, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker, and my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital, DVD, Tubi, Amazon Prime, all the places.
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has directed two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm in pre-production of my third, Best Friends Forever. I am a producer's rep, and I used to manage Sundance's Creative Distribution Initiative. This week, we welcome writer, producer, and director Laura Adkin on the show to talk about writing and directing her first feature, Reuniting, that premiered at the Austin Film Festival. This interview is all thanks to producer Eric Toms, who graciously headed to Austin Film Festival and grabbed the interview. After that, we play another round of You're the Expert. But first, Ulrich, how are you?
I am doing well. I am like chipping away at my writing, which has been nice. I don't really know how many pages. I can't remember what I said last week, but like I'm at like almost 74, I'm like just tipping into 74 now, which is nice. And I think I was like maybe 70 last week or something. Yeah, making progress. It's hard, man. It's hard. It's like when you think it's easy, it gets harder. You know, you're like, because I did this thing. I don't know if I talked about this last week, but I wrote out the whole ending of the movie, like all the whole sequence of everything, like exactly like how I wanted to go. And then I even wrote out like some more details of like how I wanted scenes to play out. And then it's like going to write the scenes that are like so clearly outlined. It's like it's hard, man. It's hard to like write words for people to say, you know, and make them sound real, and then not make it too long, and like, you know, not make it like a waste of screen time, you know. And like this thing, I wrote this scene last night that's like a page and a half, and it was just like the end to a scene. But it's like I'm just as I'm writing it, and I'm not even reading it back, I'm like, this is gonna get cut. This is too long. I guess it's just too long for what this needs to do. It's just too long. It's fun and it's cool, but like this is going to get like cut into like a third of what it is. And but the thing that's wonderful about it is like that makes the work last night not feel like a waste, is that it's not like, oh, that work I did last night is going to get cut. It's like, oh, well, this is going to replace like part of the other third of the scene that I already wrote from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is going to like get condensed. So like the beginning and the middle, the end is going to all be there, but it's just going to be like a much shorter version. So it's like, yeah, okay, sure. Like this is like way too long, but like the work I did is important because it does achieve the goal of getting me out of the scene in the way that I want it to.
You're making forward progress. It's not just about pages, right? It's about story. And
yeah, exactly.
Progressing story wise.
So yeah, it feels good. It's exciting because it's like it's so close to being like, oh my god, I wrote my second feature. Yay. Like I'm so close to being able to say that. Which
wait,
is
you've
like
never
really
written a feature before The Alternate? Did I not know that?
I wrote like half of one and like part of another, you know, and then I wrote one in college that I lost. Yeah. So like there's like, you know, lots of pieces and things out there, and the one that I lost was like in desperate need of a major rewrite. So like, you know, whatever, but I'm okay for that one to just be gone forever. And like, you know, just like as a learning experience. And I did write one other one that was an adaptation of a play, but I wrote a first draft that was like 120 pages long. And I gave it to the playwright, and he was going to do his own rewrite, but he was like, yeah, I'm too busy after 2 years of like not doing anything. Like, I can't rewrite this. So I'll work whenever you want to take another stab at it. Do your own rewrite. I'm like, oh my God. So like that is just on the show. So I don't count that. Even though I technically did write another feature, like I don't really count that as my second. Like this is like my true second feature, you know? So it's exciting. Yeah, but I actually had a question for you. This is kind of weird, but I want to ask you this question. I feel like lately I have this like deep urge to make another movie and to like have a body of work, more like not counting short films. So like, I mean, I know I have my body of work with my shorts and my feature or whatever. Like I have more than one thing I've done, but I feel like in order to really like solidify myself as like a filmmaker who matters, like having two features is like, yeah, like that'll be, now I'll really be somebody if I've got two features under my belt. So the question is to you, like you've got two features under your belt. Do you feel like somebody, Liz, or do you feel like it doesn't matter? Like, you know, one feature, two features, who cares?
Perhaps you have forgotten who you're speaking to.
I know what you're going to say.
I don't feel like anybody. I do feel better than after I made my first feature, though. So I will say
<That's good. laughs>
I don't feel like somebody, but I feel proud to have done two, and like I accomplished two major feats. So, but I would, and when we were walking out of the mix, my second feature, one of my producers said, I think that was a leg up from Bread and Butter. And I don't know if it was, different people say different things, but I'm hoping that it was, right? So if it was a leg up, then I feel like I'm going in the right direction, but I'm unsure.
Well, I'm a big Speed of Life fan. I think the movie's really good, and I think you did a great job, and I enjoyed watching it. Like, it's really a good movie with a beginning, middle, and the end.
Thank you.
So, you know, I haven't actually watched Bread and Butter.
It's okay. You don't have to.
But so I can't compare it to that, but I do feel like,
oh
man, like just looking at the trailers, like there is an evolution there that I'm like, you know, I think it's like I look at that and like other filmmakers, and I'm like, yeah, I want my like, you know, my second movie done, and my third movie, and my fourth movie, you know?
I think you followed that, but it doesn't have to be tomorrow, right? You are in the progress of making your second feature right now. You are.
Yeah.
I know we have to move on, but a quick story. I was talking to a friend of mine who listens to the show, who's recently moved to LA and is single. And he is looking at the dating apps, and he was talking about like the profiles of these women and then the first dates that he had with them. And he was like, I don't know what to talk to them about. They go on vacations and they have hobbies, but all I want to talk about are my movies or making movies or anything having to do with the industry or storytelling. And I felt like that was a very relatable thing for him. Like, I really related to that. I think you do, too. It's like, what do you talk about if you don't talk about your projects? And like,
right.
And I would say, like, you're still in the thick of it, because all we do is talk about our projects and imagine and work on them. So like, I the past few weeks, Alric, you've been like, I'm cool. It's going to be OK. I'm going to make my movie when I want to make it. Like, you don't listen back to the show, but I listen to the show. So I remember you saying that. And then now you're like, oh, I feel the urge. So it comes in waves. But I just want to say that, like, you are making it right now.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you. That's really nice to hear that, you know. And I mean, I still feel that same way. Like, I don't feel like there's a rush to do it.
Yeah.
Although I really want to make the movie. But like, I think, you know, getting it written, it feels like a really valuable thing, you know, like, and whether or not this is my next movie or not, like just to have another movie written that you can share with people.
Huge.
It's like, oh my God. And then like, I feel like I learned about myself. Like, I thought before that I could like, yeah, I'll write this one and then I'll move over to this one and then I'll move back to this one. And then, like, I don't think I'm capable of that. I don't think I can do that. I think I have to write one all the way through to the end and then have it be what it's doing, and then I can go to the next one.
Yeah,
like, I don't think I can, like, write one and then, like, like write half one and then write a half another one. Like, 'cause I tried it and it just didn't work. And like, I kept on trying to write this new script and I kept on being called back to this one that I'm like halfway through with. So it's like, well, I just was clear. I just had to listen to my body and soul and writing spirit or whatever and just get it done, you know?
I get it. I can, it's very hard for me to divide focus amongst big projects. So I have the same issue. But what I did want to mention briefly is Sean wrote a horror script and he's been secretly working on it for the past few months. And I'm only halfway through with it. But and by a few months, I mean like a pretty long time. It wasn't a few months. It was probably the past like year and a half.
Wow.
But I read half of it. I'm going to read the rest of it. But I want to produce it. Like,
wow, that's exciting.
I'm just very excited to like, I've been trying to find ways to support him creatively. And I'm so excited that he's got this like newfound ambition to make a big project too. So I just want to say like that audaciousness that we all have, I think it attracts partners and attracts collaborators too. So like when you're, you know, when your script is done, like people are going to want to help you get that second film off the ground, right? Because you have the body of work and you have the ambition and you have the track record. And I'm really excited to give Sean the opportunity for his first feature because he doesn't have one yet. So,
yeah, it's exciting. Very exciting. Anything else going on with you? Any casting updates you want to share? Anything cool?
I don't want to share it. We don't have like an attachment. We have a new strategy to get that original actress on board.
Oh, cool.
But I'll share once it's successful. And then we're still not sleeping. I just want it on the record. Oh, wow. I just want it recorded on these podcasts how little sleep we get so that when I look back and listen when I'm 80, I go, yep, I remember that. Or I don't remember that because I'm 80 and I didn't sleep for multiple years.
Just like tell your daughter, like, this is what you put me through when you were a baby. Yes. This is how much I love you, okay?
Jesus, can you understand? Love. Like a good Jewish mother, I will remind her all the time. And I will also remind all of you, don't forget to support us on Patreon, www.patreon.com/MMIH podcast. And without any more delay, here's Eric's chat with Laura Adkin.
Laura Adkin, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Yeah. And I feel like this is a real get because the Canucks are playing tonight. Yes. And you're not watching them. You're playing the Rangers. So you guys
don't even talk to me about the Rangers. In 1994, I can't.
Is that when Messier was playing for them?
That is when they won the Stanley Cup. Yeah. And we did not.
Yeah.
And I was 10 years old and I cried so much. And my mom was like, Laura, it's just a game. And I'm like, it's not just a game. Yeah.
Wait, is your mom Canadian too? I feel like she should have been like, yeah, Laura,
she
cry
was
harder.
Just like,
we will have our revenge.
What is happening? Yeah. No, I played hockey for many, many years, so I'm very Canadian.
Oh, I do not have the hand-eye coordination for that. I sit in the stands and drink beer and go, come on!
So who's your team?
Strangely, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay.
I'm from the Bay Area, but my sister liked Penguins, and so therefore I used to watch the Penguins.
The Penguins are my East Coast team, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I came up like when Lemieux was playing, yeah. And Barrasso was like, you know, the goaler and everything else, so.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good time. And then, Mario decided to, you know, quit 6 times, and it was fun. Please give us the elevator pitch regarding Uniting.
Okay, so Reuniting is about a group of friends who were best friends in college. They've kind of grown apart, but they come together for a weekend to celebrate their 25th anniversary. 25th reunion. Reunion. Yeah. Yes, because it's called Reuniting. right, yeah.
So you were part of this film.
I was. I think I was there. No, and they come together and, you know, it's fun and light. And then secrets of the past come bubbling to the surface. And it's really about that reassessment of where you're at in your life, especially when you're around the people that knew you when you were young and you had dreams and you had ideas and you had your whole life ahead of you. And now those same people are seeing you maybe not where you thought you would be or in a different place. And just sort of having that realization of, you know, where am I right now?
Mm-hmm. And about how many days did you shoot?
I think we shot 20 days, 22 days, something like that. I think we shot 16 or 17 days on Bowen. And then we did 5 days of additional photography in Vancouver and then some reshoots on Bowen. So, something like 22, 23 days.
tell us what you can about what the rough budget was.
It was not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. So less than $100 million.
Yes. Okay. Roughly less than $100 million. No, we really had a very, very supportive community. And so, you know, I've been working in the film and television industry in Vancouver for 20 years. So I pulled in all the favors. I asked a lot of people to come out and help. One thing that we did and I decided early on is every single person got paid the exact same amount of money. Mm-hmm. So it was just like everyone was on the same playing field, come and play with us or not. And it was during COVID. So it was, you know, a lot of people weren't working and it was, yeah, it all just kind of worked itself out. We got an amazing crew. Like our crew was just phenomenal. Like Vancouver is a service town.
Yeah.
So everyone on our little budget indie film was people that work on those big budget shows. But yeah, it was really great to have these insanely talented professionals come out and work on our film.
Did you have to change any of what you were shooting to kind of maybe make the cast feel a bit safer? Like it was just like, hey, listen, how about we change some of these interiors to exteriors?
Not really. I think we all just kind of, we all COVID tested and then just went to the island. Mm-hmm. We didn't really go anywhere else. And Bowen was pretty shut down. Like there was a tourism ban, mm-hmm. a travel ban at that time. So no one was coming onto the island from, we were only there because we were working. So we were allowed to be. But no, not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. We had COVID safety officers and we had all of that. So I think everyone felt pretty safe.
So you wrote this project.
I did.
How did the project kind of manifest? Where was the germ of the idea?
So I would say about maybe 10 years ago, I was at the Toronto Film Festival. And there was the 25th anniversary screening of The Big Chill. Mm-hmm. And all the cast was there and the director was there. And they did this big like Q&A at the end. And it was amazing. And I remember thinking, I love this movie. I love movies like this, and no one makes these movies anymore.
Yeah.
Like, nobody makes these irreverent dramas where people, like, deal with stuff through witty dialogue, and it's just people.
Yeah.
And these big ensemble casts. So I kind of had that in the back of my head, but I wasn't quite in a place to tell a story. I didn't know what that would be. I just knew I wanted to do that. And then in 2019, I was like, okay, I need to make my first feature.
Yeah.
And I read a bunch of scripts. I was like, well, maybe I'll make someone else's script. And I didn't really like any of them. And I thought I wanted to write. And that's when that idea came back up. And I'm like, well, what do I have access to? I have access to an amazing group of talented actors in Vancouver that I know that are about this age range. I want to deal with these subject matters. As I'm getting older, I'm thinking about these things. I like to write about things that I'm either struggling with or trying to like make sense of. I write about it to mm-hmm. maybe help me. I don't know. That's like some weird form of therapy. I'm sure I'm not the only writer that does that. And yeah, then it kind of spiraled from there. It just kind of made sense.
Well, to speak to what you had said previous, it seems like just by looking at your IMDb mm-hmm. and doing some research on you, I'm going to make an assumption that your brain is just constantly on fire.
Yes, that is accurate.
You are always doing things. Mm-hmm. And what's more is you kind of seem to be a jack of all trades. Like you are really inserting yourself mm-hmm. like kind of everywhere, which is amazing. I want to get to it a little bit later, but you absolutely embody like the independent, you know, film spirit. But I want to ask, what was your pre-production looking like, and then how did production end up working out? Like, did everything go according to plan? Because it seemed like you had to kind of zig and zag a little bit for health reasons, but you
we
still...
did. Yeah, it was a little bit crazy. Obviously, any independent film, you need money. Mm-hmm. And so we had decided on our shooting dates before we had a dime.
Really?
Yes, because we had cast. They were available. Jesse and Michelle were on a show. The guy that runs really fast. You can figure it out from there. And that
subtle
that show ended on a certain day, and another one of our cast was doing a film or whatever back east, and so he was able to come in, and everyone's schedule just miraculously had this like 2-week window, so we built everything around that.
Yeah.
And then I lost one of my cast because she booked something that was going to pay her lots of money. Mm-hmm. So it was like, yeah, fair, go take that. And then on the show that Jesse and Michelle were on, someone got COVID. Mm-hmm. So their whole shooting schedule got pushed. So we're like a week out, and all of a sudden our actors that were supposed to be available were not available all the time. So plus not only were they not available because they were shooting, every 2 days they had to go into Vancouver for a COVID test. because they had to be COVID testing while they were working on the show. So it was like a bit of a logistical nightmare, but we figured it out.
Yeah.
A couple scenes I had to take a character out or move someone to a different place. But for the most part, it worked out really well. And, you know, we ended up getting Carmen Moore, who plays Natalie. And she signed on board 3 days before we went.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. Everyone else had been attached to the project for a really long time. And she just like dove right in. It was insane.
I have so many questions, but I feel like I kind of want to go in a semi-chronological order. So where did the financing come from? Did you have financiers? Was this the sort of thing we're doing Seed and Spark? Are we throwing our own money into it? Like, how did this all kind of come about?
Yeah, so we definitely put, my husband and I put...
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
A lot of our own money into it, as one does in the independent film world. And then, we had some amazing investors who just believed in the project. To me, I find it easier to ask one person for a big chunk of money than to ask like a bunch of people for $10 on a crowdfunding thing. To me, I've done that before. It's so much work. It's so exhausting. So we went a different route, and that was amazing. And, you know, we had people come out and support, a lot of people that don't work in film, and mostly women and like female entrepreneurs that were able to give money, and they just wanted to support me and support the project, which was pretty spectacular.
Was that important to you?
It was. Yeah, it was just, I mean, my pitch was, you probably won't make your money back, and it's quite a terrible investment.
This is a terrible pitch, I'm going to be honest with you.
It worked every single time. Honesty. And I'm like, if you want to be part of this thing that we're doing, come on board, write me a check. And thinking that no one ever would. And then a bunch of people did, which was really, it was really awesome.
And speaking of your pitch, so so what did you have in your pitch package? Did you have like, similar shots? Did you have, comp boards? Did you
have like, we had deck? All of those. I'd never done that before because I only ever made shorts and nobody cares about that. Like for a short film, you just kind of make it.
Yeah.
So that was really fun to put the pitch deck together because it really made me think about all of the things that I wanted to do. So, my producer, Krista Rand, is like incredible. And she was like making, I told her what I wanted. And then she was like, you mean like this? And then she'd make it in like 5 seconds. But yeah, we had a lot. We had comp films. We had, what the tone was, what the color palette was. I had a director's vision on there talking about like what I wanted from the film and why I was making it, and shots of the location, because the location plays a huge part in the movie. And then, we had our attached cast, which was helpful.
Now, you are an actor. You've been writing, though, for a very long time.
Yeah.
So when you're on set, how much latitude are you giving your actors? Like, how much can they explore? Can they improvise? Or you're just like, no, this is the script we have to stick to?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have lots of conversations with your actors ahead of time, you talk things through. And for me, as a writer, I think about what an actor wants to see on the page. And I trust actors a lot. So I don't overwrite things. I understand that actors can do a lot with a look, with just feeling the feelings that they're going to feel in the moment, and that we can read all of that on screen. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of improv that happened. There were occasional conversations about like, oh, is this actually working? Like, does this make sense?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you say something out loud and when you wrote it, it makes sense. And then you say it out loud and you're like, oh, but a lot of that happened during the table read process.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, maybe this doesn't work and we have to change a couple things. There was one day where we were doing a scene and it just was not working.
Yeah.
And it was my dialogue that was not working. And I was like, okay, everybody stop. Everyone take like 10 minutes. I took a piece of a napkin or something. I rewrote the scene. I handed it to the actors. I'm like, okay, now we're going to shoot this. And they're like, okay. And they went with it and it turned out amazing. And it was what it needed to be. So that kind of stuff happened. There wasn't a lot of improv-ing dialogue. Yeah, if they had a question about it, we would just like talk about it and come up with something. Maybe they would come up with the idea or I would come up with the idea, but we would make sure that everything made sense for everybody.
Let's talk about your writing style. Mm-hmm. So what is your writing process? Are you starting with like, this is a character and I want this character to go on this journey? Mm-hmm. Or is it, I like this plot idea, or is it the setting? What's your way into whenever you're telling a story?
I think every script is different. Mm-hmm. For this, I kind of knew, I had the idea of some of the characters, just like very broad ideas of the characters. I knew how it had to end. Mm-hmm. Or at least I knew that climactic thing that had to happen, or the two climactic things that had to happen. My original ending was very different. I wrapped everything up in a bow and it was like way too nice. It was very, you know, a movie of the week.
Yeah.
Because at that point I was so invested in these characters that I wanted them all to have a happy ending. And then I realized they could not have a happy ending, all of them, because life, that's what it's like. But then, you know, part of my writing process is I know kind of the big beats that I have to hit. And then I just write. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people outline and do all of that stuff, but that doesn't really work for me. Mm-hmm. For me, I discover the characters. I discover what's happening like while I'm writing. Mm-hmm. But what I did have to do for this one that I hadn't done in the past is I really had to be clear on the characters. So I did like character profiles for each of them to make sure that they each were unique enough. And if they weren't, then I was going to like meld them into one character.
Yeah.
Because six people, you want to make sure they're very distinct. Their voices are distinct. They have their own thing going on. Otherwise, like, they don't need to be there. So
how in depth were the character profiles and kind of what were you putting into them?
I mean, it was just really me sort of thinking about like, and I never shared this with the cast or anything. I just used it for me to inform my writing. But, you know, I kind of thought about like, what are their flaws? What are they trying to overcome? Who are they at the beginning of the film? Who are they at the end of the film? Just, you know, kind of standard story arc stuff, but also, you know, like what I always think about what people's professions are and mm-hmm. what they do and their relationships to each other. That was the other thing, is trying to interweave the different relationships was difficult. And I had to do many passes where I went through and I'm like, okay, is this arc working? And is this arc working? Okay, they are.
Yeah. When you finish your draft, are you showing it to friends? Are you doing readings? What are you doing in order to like really kind of like?
I mean, no one sees the first draft.
No. That's
never,
just filled
ever.
With shame. That's that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So I actually was invited to be part of this thing called Women in the Director's Chair in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was on my second draft then. And it is just like amazing incubator with these other women. And, you know, you workshop your script and your ideas and stuff like that. And so that really helped a lot to get it to the next pass. And then at that point, when I was probably like on like the third draft or something, maybe that's when I wanted to start to bring people on board. So Krista read that draft and, you know, we got feedback and notes from other people and stuff. And we had submitted to Telefilm, mm-hmm. which is government financing in Canada. They did not come on board until the end of the film.
Really?
But they gave some great notes in the process. So we were able to implement those notes. And then I started to, you know, give the script out to my writer friends that I trust.
Yeah.
To me, it's really important that you don't just like hand anyone the script for notes.
Yeah.
You have to, first of all, you have to ask, like, you have to tell the person what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Right? Not just like, do you like my script? It's like, no, does this specific thing work? Does this work? Does this work? Does this make sense? And then I have a very select few writers that I send my scripts to.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, early in my writing career, I would, yeah, just give it to anybody. It's like, mailman, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
And, like, writers have just got a million ideas. And like, you know what I would do? It's just like, well, you know what? You should go write your own script then.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I need to make sure this thing works. Now, you really are. I mean, like, in going through your CV, like, There's writing, there's directing, mm-hmm. there's acting. You're a still photographer on one of them
apparently,
as well.
Yeah. So, I just always wanted to be on set.
Yeah. So what was the first one? Where did you fall in love first?
So I always wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
So I started that when I was like 3 years old. I was on stage. Yes. I played the head angel in the Christmas pageant. Uh-huh. I had a line. I told the shepherds where to go to find the baby Jesus. And I had a
really
little...
the hero of that
oh,
story.
Oh, yeah. Really. I really was. There's this photo of me in my little angel outfit, a little halo and everything, and I'm bright red. I'm so sick. And my mom is like, well, you can't go. And I was like, the show must go on. So I made my mom bring me. I probably got everyone else sick, but I insisted on going, and I loved it. And I remember so clearly standing on the stage with the lights and saying my line. And I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So we did that for a very long time. I went to performing arts high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I trained in lots of different places, and I kind of thought someone would just give me a television series.
Sure.
Which never happened. And I was very confused by that. And then I had always written. I just never showed anyone my writing. Mm-hmm. And so then I started to write the characters that I would want to play.
Was your writing always screenplays? Were they always scripts? Or was it like, you know, oh, this is a short story?
Yeah, always scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always wrote scripts before I even knew how to write a script. I used to write it like in pen, and then I would figure out the formatting, and I'd like write it in a pen on lined paper. I would write my scripts.
I have a script in my drawer at home that is like a legal pad that is all pencil and paper.
Oh my God, that's so funny. But I just love making movies, and I love being on set. And so, you know, I did so many different things. When I was going to Stella Adler, the Acting Conservatory in Los Angeles, I had friends who were just making stuff. And so I would just go and hang out with them. I held the boom once. I like ran around. It's just like, I just loved being on set. So I'd always do that. And one of the other jobs that I have, which is not on my IMDb, where I made most of my money in the first chunk of my career, was as a stand-in and a photo double. And so I got to be on set all the time. And as a stand-in, people don't know what that is. The actors come in and they rehearse the scene and they block it. And then they go to hair and makeup or whatever they need to do. And the stand-ins come in and work with the lighting department and the camera department to light the scene. Mm-hmm. And so I just got to be around all these technicians. And so I got to ask lots of questions.
Very smart.
I was probably quite annoying. But right before I directed my first short, I was working on a very big show in Vancouver. It was like, you know, probably $200, $300 million. I actually asked what the budget was, and I think the first AD was like, I don't think there's a budget. Yeah, like it was a huge, huge movie. Could probably figure it out. It's set in space. And it was great because I knew that I just got this grant, again, Canadian government, here you go, money, to make my first short as a director. And so I was just like absorbing everything I could on set and asking lots of questions. And why are you using that lens? And how does that lighting thing work? And what's your job? And what's your job? And why do you love your job? And yeah, so I got, that was my film school really, was just being on set for like a decade.
Well, and also I want to ask, so there's, I'm willing to bet the filmmakers that you grew up with just watching the films and you like, who were the people that were influencing you? And then once you really were in the business, like, who did you get a chance to kind of meet? And then when you were filming this, who were some of the directors that you were looking at? Like, okay, let's take a look at their work.
Well, I think one of the big things, and I've talked about this before, is I never thought that I could be a director because I never, like as an actor, I never saw a woman direct, never had a female director. I don't think I had a person of color either. I think it was just all white men directing, which is fine. But I just was like, oh, okay, that's not really a job for me. Whereas I always knew I could be an actor because everyone on TV looked like me. So it wasn't until I was watching like the Oscars and I saw Kathryn Bigelow win and I was like, hold on. Wait a second, because not only was it a woman winning an Academy Award as a director, but she made a war movie.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know, in my head, it was like, well, women have to direct like, you know, romantic movies because that's sort of the only time I'd ever seen a woman's name anywhere. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, OK, this is something I can do. And so that was the moment for me seeing her win that Academy Award and seeing the film that she made. Where I went, okay, maybe I can do this, right? And then, you know, Patty Jenkins making her superhero movie is like, oh my God, that I want to do that too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these women being given big budget movies was really exciting. And also like kind of annoying because if they didn't do well, there was so much pressure and it was like, oh, women can't do it. Whereas, like, you know, men would be able to have many, many failures. But I think it's, you know, I think a lot more people are coming to the table now, and there's like so many people telling stories, and it's really exciting. I think it's the absolute best time to make movies right now.
I agree.
And to watch movies.
Yeah. Who were some of the, so when you're doing Reuniting,
yeah,
what were some of the films that you were watching to kind of get inspiration? Like, what were the...
I mean, everything from the 80s and 90s.
Really?
I love those movies so much.
Yeah.
I love The Big Chill, obviously, we talked about. Breakfast Club, I love Steel Magnolias. Oh my God, Sally Fields, everything. And just all of those films. Like, I love the feeling. I love the look of them. I really love watching something, you know, when you'd watch something on your VHS tape so many times, and then it would just be like you could,
Yeah.
So good. And, you know, one of my first jobs is I worked in a movie theater I was a projectionist back when we had film, and it was just so cool. I would build the film, and then I would run the film, and then I would sit in the booth watching the movies and hearing the, you know, the click of everything. And yeah, I just like, I loved all movies.
Yeah. When you're preparing for your shoot, are you meticulous? Are you doing stick figure drawings? Are you, you know, getting like, you know, comp pictures? Are you building something in Unreal Engine? Like, well, what is your process when you're getting ready for
everything? Yeah, I think for me, working with my cinematographer was like everything.
Yeah.
So we've worked, so Sterling Bancroft is my cinematographer, and we worked together for like a decade. He's shot almost everything I've made. And so, you know, we had a lot of conversations before, and it was funny because for this one, we tried to prep, and then we just realized that it just wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Because this was a film that needed to be felt in the moment. So I planned, like, I knew what I wanted. I knew how I wanted to shoot it. I knew I didn't want to do a lot of coverage. I knew I really wanted to play with the space and allow the actors to just be there. And I didn't, you know, I wanted them to be able to give everything every time.
Yeah.
And not worry about, because I was working with a lot of television actors, and in TV, you overcover everything because nobody really knows what they want. And there's so many people that have to have their hands in it, mm-hmm, that you want to make sure you don't miss anything.
Yeah.
So the actors get exhausted by that. They get exhausted. And I didn't want that. I wanted to make sure that they could give it every single time, whether they were on camera or not. So we had an aesthetic that we talked about. And then most of it was decided on the day after I watched the rehearsal.
Now, looking back, you know, you've made your feature now. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But looking back on something like The Interrogation, which was the first thing I saw that you had kind of directed, or at least that came up.
I'm so embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed. It's where we start. We had a filmmaker that I spoke to earlier today who had said, no matter what you do towards your creative career, that's putting money in the bank.
Yeah.
And so you have to do that in order to get here.
Yeah.
But how has your style kind of changed, or what have you learned over the years when it comes to directing?
Don't act in anything you're directing.
Okay.
That was the first thing I learned.
Why?
Oh my gosh. So this is my opinion.
Okay.
This is my opinion. I'm sure people will have a different opinion.
This is Laura's opinion.
This is Laura Adkin opinion. Yeah. So my opinion is that an actor's job is to fight for and protect your character, mm-hmm, above everything else. And as a director, your job is to fight for the story and, mm-hmm, protect the story. And those two things can sometimes clash.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what you pick. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the first thing. It's like, how do you fully fight for your character when it's in opposition to maybe what the story needs?
Yeah.
The second thing is, for me, part of what I do as a director is, it's going to sound so weird, but I need to feel the scene. So I'm not a video village director.
Okay.
I am definitely, I like to be in it.
Yeah.
Right. I like to be in it. I like to be like as close to the actors as possible without like being in the scene and being annoying. So I'm like usually like hiding somewhere in the corner. But for me, it's not just watching the monitor. It's feeling what's happening in the scene with everybody. And I know for me personally, I can't be fully present as an actor and be in the scene as an actor and be completely aware of every single thing that's going on around me.
Yeah.
I feel like for me anyway, I would lose one of the two.
So that means you must have a pretty good relationship with your DP then, because if you're just like, look, I'm going to be with the actors, you be with the camera.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's both. I think it's like, I sometimes annoy him because I'm like so close, especially if I'm like trying to be near. He's like, Lord, get out of the way. But no, I think we have a very very good relationship. I'm a very technical director. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very clear on what I want technically. And once we decide that, then it can be about the actors.
Yeah. You'd mentioned a little bit about Canada and mm-hmm. Canadian funding. I've heard both sides of that kind of story, where on the one hand, it's fantastic. Like, you know, you're going to get some money from the Canadian government. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it can be very difficult because yeah. there is a limited amount of resources that they have to give.
Yeah.
So that there's quite a lottery system that you have to go through. Yeah. So would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think we took a very hybrid approach to this film, where I had a bit of an American mindset of like, we are going to make this.
Yeah.
And I think what happens in Canada a lot is that people have great ideas and they've got a bunch of stuff to do, and they apply to Telefilm and they don't get it, and then they don't make their film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't want to do that. I was like, if Telefilm's not going to give us money, we're going to make it anyway.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why we ended up getting the money in the end, because, you know, we showed them what we could do. And they're like, oh, yes, okay, great, here you go. But I think if you want to make a movie.
Yeah.
And figure it out.
That's good advice. As I said before, like, you really, I mean, if you go through your IMDb, it's
yeah.
second unit director, you know, on-set photographer, you know, actress, you know, director, writer, producer, all of these things. It was that out of necessity, or was that the sort of thing like, I'm just interested in all aspects of this?
No, I think it was an evolution. If you're in a career for 20 years, I think no matter what you do, things evolve and change. And mm-hmm. some of it was out of necessity. But, you know, I really thought that what I wanted to be was an actor. I did not think I wanted to do anything else. And I started writing because of that. And then realizing I really like writing and I'm really good at it. Of all the things I do, I think writing is probably the thing I'm the strongest at.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started directing, and I, like, that's my path now. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I'd started directing earlier. But I think my journey as an actor brought me to be the director that I am. So I think I needed to go on that
mm-hmm.
journey.
And you've been pretty strict with narrative. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been this idea of like, maybe I'm doing a music video, maybe documentary? It was like, is it wide open? Or is like,
oh God, I would never do a documentary. Too hard.
Dude,
too hard.
Tell me about it, right?
Oh,
that's
my
crazy.
Gosh, documentary filmmakers, I'm just like, huh.
Dude, they just go out and they just shoot stuff and they hope to find lightning
yeah.
in a bottle. Like, that's nuts.
And also, I can tell my actors what to say and then they'll say it.
Yeah.
And then they'll hit their marks and they'll, you know. But in a documentary, you don't know what people are going to do.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I so much respect for documentary filmmakers. Never. I would never do it. I've never really thought about doing a music video. I guess if someone asked me to do it. But I don't know. I don't know if that's really my jam.
You just want to tell the stories.
I think so. Yeah.
And are you open to other people's stories? Because, I mean, also found a lot of the stuff that you do, like, you're writing yeah. the stuff and you're directing the stuff and producing.
I mean, I think that is sort of out of necessity as well. Uh-huh. Just because no one's going to care about something as much as I'm going to care about it. My next project that I'm out pitching right now, I have someone else wrote it. Her name is Catherine McKenzie, and she's an incredible author. She's like, I think it's like 20 novels or something she's
wow.
sold, and she's moving into the screenplay world. And, you know, during the writer's strike, we're both Canadian. And so we're like, oh, let's work on something in Canada that doesn't have anything to do with America, doesn't have anything to do with the strike. And so, you know, we're kind of in the process of that. And that's been interesting and fun, and I am very excited about that challenge. I would love to direct other people's work,
yeah,
as well as write my own stuff. I don't really have an idea right now, so I'm like, I'm idealist, so I want to find something to work on.
From what I see about you and what we've talked about today, I'm gonna wait about 15.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money
at Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You'll have an idea. Yeah. We're now going to get to our final six questions. Okay. These are kind of rapid fire questions. What was the first film you ever made and how do you feel about it now? And this can be like something you made in the backyard with your friends when you were a kid. This could be a high school project, whatever it happens to be.
I can't remember what my first film was, but I definitely would write little plays and make my cousins be in it. And I'd like write the songs and stuff and they all hated it. None of them wanted to do it. None of my family wanted to watch. I'd be like, it's time for the show. And my family would be like, oh my God, Laura. But that was definitely my first, and I would direct them, and I didn't even realize I was doing it then. But yeah, The Interrogation was the first film I ever made. Oh my God, it's so bad.
How do you feel about it now?
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
When was the last time you saw it?
Oh my God, a long time ago. I had no idea what I was doing. Uh-huh. I really did. I'm glad I did it, but I had no idea. I don't know. I just, like, the character was not right for me. I was just, like, obsessed with Mariska Hargitay. I just wanted to be her. And I was, like, 20 years old, like, trying to be a detective. And, like, it's just so silly. It was just so ridiculous. But I learned a lot. And I worked with a great DP who's now, like, this massive director in Vancouver and DP and doing. So that's actually very exciting, watching people kind of grow. We all kind of grow up together and do stuff. But yeah. Oh, it's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
What is some of the best filmmaking advice you've ever gotten?
Like, just do it. If you want to make something, make something. One director that I was doing a director shadow with on a show. And I always was like, oh, this is the way I'm supposed to do it. And I asked him about shot lists. And to me, shot lists, I didn't really understand them. They didn't really make sense, but I knew I had to do them. And he's like, don't do them. Like, do what works for you.
Yeah.
And don't worry about the way you're supposed to do it. Just figure out the way that works for you.
What is some of the worst filmmaking advice you've ever gotten?
If you don't get telefilm, don't make your movie. Like, there's so many people are just like, oh, well, I guess you won't make your movie. Oh, I mean, the advice I always get is, you know, don't put your own money into your film, which I've done every single time.
Yeah.
But the one piece of advice I did get was around that was don't count on money until it's in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
That's a good
one. If someone says they're going to give you money, don't, like, until it's literally in your bank account, don't assume that that money is going to be there.
Do you have a goal as a filmmaker?
Oh my gosh. I think just to keep telling stories, keep rediscovering things. I hope that every movie I make is not as good as the next movie I'm going to make. Like, mm-hmm. I hope that every time I do something, I learn and just become better. Yeah. I mean, I just want to work with great people. I want to work with great people. I want to tell stories that matter and that are important. And I want to have more money to do it.
More money.
More money. It's never going to be enough, though. It's never enough, no matter how much you have.
If you could go back in time and give yourself a bit of advice to younger you, what would it be?
Just trust. I think I had a student that I was talking to ask me if I regret anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can regret things. I think everything that happens brings you to where you are now. So I don't regret anything that I did. You know, sometimes you wish things had happened differently, but I think it's really important to just, like, trust what you're doing and trust that it will happen when it's going to happen and that things unfold in a really unpredictable way.
Mm-hmm.
And this industry is not an industry where there's a linear path. You know, you go to Harvard Law and you get I don't really know anything about law school, but I assume if you get the highest mark in your class, like, you will get a job.
Mm-hmm.
100% you will get a job. You can be the best actor, the best filmmaker, the best writer, whatever. And there's no guarantee because art is subjective. And also, you never know when an opportunity is going to come. Like, luck is preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
And the only part of that you can control is the preparation.
Yeah.
You can't control when an opportunity is going to come by. So,
last question.
Yeah.
Is making movies hard?
I would say yes and no.
Okay.
I can't quote the movie. Darn it. There's a great quote that I can't quote, but it's something about, you know, if things are hard, that's what makes them a good thing. Hopefully,
like,
people
baseball or
maybe
something like
maybe
that.
There's maybe there's something in there, but I think that's really important. Like, I just love it. Of course it's hard. But to me, when something goes wrong and then you fix it and you like solve the problem, like that's exciting. I think filmmaking is incredibly hard and incredibly fun and amazing and wonderful. And like, if I wanted to do something easy, I probably would not be making film.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, how do people support you? How do people find the movie? How do people make you the best and most celebrated filmmaker in the world?
So if you are in Austin,
yes,
you can watch the movie tomorrow, which is Sunday. They will not be in Austin.
This is going to be a couple of weeks from now, so this is probably not going to be. You know, they want to be.
So if they were, they could have seen it, but you missed it. That sucks for you. So well, I'm not sure yet. So you should follow us at Reuniting Film on Instagram. I'm way too old to do TikTok. I do not understand any of that. So don't follow us there. Or at Laura Adkin. And, you know, whatever's going to happen next, we're just kind of in the middle of figuring out our next steps.
So we have Eric here with us, who was the one who conducted the interview with Laura. Eric, welcome to the show. And what do you remember about your talk with Laura?
Thank you guys so much. Here's what I remember my talk with Laura. So first off, big shout out to the Austin Film Festival for hooking us up with all these fantastic guests. And also a huge shout out to the Omni Hotel for getting us their really cool podcasting suite. Laura was the last interview of the day, and I had stacked 8 interviews. So I was absolutely burnt by the end of the day, and she was exactly the guest that you wanted to come in because she had terrific energy. She was really, really exciting. She seems like the exact right person to have on this podcast because she 100% comes across as a person who's just a doer. She talked in great length about how she learned so much being a stand-in, like that's pretty much how she made her money, and while she was there, she was kind of the annoying person that would ask a million questions, but of course, that's how you learn in our business. You just ask a ton of questions, and she was absolutely lovely to talk to, and she just seems like she's a wonderful Canadian woman.
Nice. Amazing. Well, Eric, thank you so much for doing that. I got my fingers crossed that I'm going to be coming to Austin with you next year.
Yeah.
I really want to go back. It was so much fun to go. And I've got my script that I'm finishing up. I'm going to submit it. So, I mean, I don't know, like, knock on wood. But if I get, like, in or semi, second, finalist, quarter, whatever, like, that'll be pretty sweet. But I don't know. I mean, it's my script is insane. But maybe it's insane what people like.
Maybe that's what people need is insane scripts. I know. I just finished my movie. So am I going to get the grand jury prize? Yes. Yes, I am. So then I'll be there and then you'll be there and it'll be fun. Liz,
it'll be so much fun.
I'll be home and I'll be trying to sleep at home.
Yeah. Well, by that it's in October, so by then your progeny
you're not gonna be sleeping. No.
That's only 8 months away, Eric.
Yeah, 8 months. That's a good.
I hope you're sleeping in 8 months. I mean, dear God Almighty, like I hope that's not your future. Jeez,
it's been 6.5 months. I mean, like there's really no guarantee of anything at this point.
I guess that's true. So. Guess what the time is? It is time for You're the Expert. This is a segment that our wonderful producer, Eric Thoms, who you just heard his lovely voice, has invented for us, which is a segment where he comes up with a question that he thinks or knows we would be the absolute experts in. These we read ahead of time so we can plan out our ideas, our thoughts. I did not read this one ahead of time, but I'm sure I think I'll be fine. But yeah, so here we go. I'm going to go ahead and ask this and Liz will answer first and then I'll chime in.
Mm-hmm.
I have been told that working on film sets is a great way to learn about filmmaking. How can I get started? I have a great answer for this, but Liz, you go ahead first.
Oh, I feel like I've given an answer similar to what I'm going to give for this one in a previous episode. So I'm sorry for being redundant, but it's film school sets. It's getting on film school sets and starting at the very and to not be above student film. I think just from my experience going to USC, and I spoke at USC last night, and I depressed the hell out of an adorable intermediate producing class.
Oh,
it was bad. You could see their faces just went dark as soon as I started talking.
You hit them hard, huh? You gave them the real truth.
I always do, and I always regret it. But there is a very, very strong networking effort on behalf of USC film students, and I'm sure it exists amongst many other film schools across the country. And I would say once you start PAing, you start getting in the Rolodex, you start becoming reliable, you start getting invited to drinks afterwards, you just get in on the community, and you could start asking questions and infiltrating the USC network from outside. So that's my advice. Mm. What is your perfect answer, Ulrich?
Well, I have two. So one is, yes, I'll double down on the student films and the free jobs. Like if you have any like buddy in your world who says, hey, I've got a movie I'm making. We need crew to work on it for free. Jump on that. Because I did that. And, you know, I just basically I had randomly met somebody that had cold. This is a long story, but I'll do a really quick version. I had cold called assistant directors from this real director that we have in the Bay Area to try to find out more about being an assistant director. He was like, hey, this guy Jeff Kramer is like the ultimate PA whiz, and he's like trying to like bring PAs together and like, you know, unionize and get them going. Like you have to be connected to Jeff Kramer. So then I think he either connected me with Jeff or I found him online, and then I reached out to Jeff, and then he brought me in to like help him produce a video for his friend, or shoot a video for a friend of his who was making this like do it yourself robot design thing. And so I did that. That was the first time I met Jeff Kramer. And then he was like, hey, these guys I know are making this movie like with like a real crew and everything, and they need people to work for free. Do you want to come out and be like a camera PA? And I was like, yes, I do. And then that job ended up getting me like almost every job from there, because like I met a bunch of people that like ended up giving me referrals for later that got me like my internship, that internship got me like my full-time job, and that full-time job led to like all my freelance opportunities, and my DP on my feature I met through that. And so it's like you can like a lot of my career could be traced back to saying yes to a freebie job.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is that when I wanted to work on the big time TV show that was shooting in San Francisco, it was like this big NBC Universal production called Trauma. It was on NBC for 2 seasons. They were in San Francisco shooting, and I like really wanted to get on set. I had no connections. I had no idea of like what's going on. My friend was working on the ambulance. He said, hey, I saw them shooting up the street from our house. Like there's a film set. You should go by. I was like, yeah, let's swing by. Let's go check it out. So I went back down to I probably have told this story before.
I think you
went
have.
Down to the film set, and then I just like sat there, watched. And then I happened to recognize a stand-in, going back to stand-ins, who was the lead actor in my friend's movie that I helped him PA'd on out like years ago. And he was like, hey, Ulrich. I was like, hey, Larry, how's it going? And like, I just chatted with him, and I was like, hey, I want to be a PA. Like, do you know like any PAs? He's like, yeah, well, that's the key PA over there. Yeah, you should go talk to him. So I went up to the key PA and introduced myself, and I got on set 2 weeks later. Or not even 2 weeks later, 2 days later.
Nice.
I got on set as like a 10th PA or something on like a really big day. So I would say like you don't necessarily need to know anybody. Like you don't have to randomly happen to know a stand-in. But if you go to a set and you can identify who the key PA is, mm-hmm. introduce yourself, because they might need more people. And there's nothing wrong with going to a showing up to a set and being excited, as long as you like are professional and don't interrupt shooting and find the right time to go up to somebody. It's like, give it a shot. It might work out. So, well,
but the fact that you knew a stand in helped a little
that
bit.
That helped. Yeah. Because they pointed me to the right person to ask, but it's not like the stand in introduced me. You know, I still went up to him.
But you appeared less creepy, I would say. Like if you said something probably like, oh, I know this stand in and I'm here. Do you need any support? Like, I think it just gives you one less creepy notch.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, use whatever you can to like seem more normal. But like, I mean, also that guy was super nice, and and not everyone's super nice. Yeah. So like, you also have to like be aware of that and like know like, hey, maybe you'll run into a jerk, you know, but like, there's nothing wrong with wearing your heart in your sleeve and just like, you know, being excited and down to help, as long as you know the time to talk and the time not to talk, you know, because if I had done that while they were shooting, I would be ostracized from the filming community. You know, so anyways, I hope that answers the question. I think those are both good answers. But yeah, don't be afraid to work for free. That is like, you'll learn so much. Even if you think you know everything, you'll learn even more than you could possibly imagine. But let us know what you think. What has worked for you guys? How did you guys first get on set? What was your first set story? We want to hear all these things. You can send us those thoughts or questions, comments, or suggestions to podcast@mickeymoviesishard.com. Or if you really like the show, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Ratings are great too. Also, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast and YouTube at Making Movies Is Hard Podcast. And thanks to Lord Atkin for coming on the show. Thanks to the Austin Film Festival for having us back this year. And to the Omni Hotel for hosting us in their podcast room for a second time. Thanks to Nicole Pender from Pender PR for setting this up. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Freimut, for doing the editing. Thanks to Robert Jones for handling all of our social media. And a big, big thanks to our producer, Eric Thomas, for being awesome and getting us this interview. Thanks to you all for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You start if you want.
Sure. Sure. I'll start. I'm recording. Okay.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.